Racism is the lowest, most crudely primitive form of collectivism. Ayn Rand. Good evening. Welcome to Snell Nation. It's good to have you back. So, tonight, we're going to talk about sanctioned racism. A little term I threw together. It was the only wording I could put together to describe what we witnessed in 2020. Just all the mayhem and the race obsession in America reaching its peak, where there was just, you know, fighting in the street, you know, looting and murder and rioting and so many things happening. And, you know, people being attacked based on their race in many cases. And, of course, when you make that statement, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, some poor defenseless black person and being assaulted by some, you know, white redneck or whatever. Because, you know, that's the picture that's been painted in our minds through a lot of the mainstream media propaganda. But I'm actually referring to black-on-white violence, black-on-Asian violence, overall black mob violence, which I've spoken on before. And it's one of those things that's, you know, grossly underreported and in a lot of cases just, you know, not reported at all. And I'll go ahead and throw out the book recommendation. I've made it several times, and it's titled White Girl Bleed a Lot by Colin Flaherty, and it covers a lot of information. It covers a lot, just years and years of black on Asian violence. There's a section on black on white violence, you know, crossing nearly 100 cities, and overall just mob violence. And a lot of the stories that the author digs into, you know, I was actually amazed because I had to look back. I'm like, yeah, that can't be true. You know, there's no way. And then I'll look it up. I'm like, holy smokes, that actually happened. Like, how did I miss this? And stuff that, you know, I live in Ohio, you know, one incident in particular, which I'm going to talk about in a second, took place in Pennsylvania. You know, it's just pretty close. It's not that far away, but never heard of it. You know, and this was something that this incident in particular, they say it got national attention, but I did not even know this happened until listening to my audiobooks, this White Girl Bleed a Lot audiobook, and then started digging into just sort of fact checking some of the statements the author was making, because I knew things were bad. You know, and I knew, you know, just on what I've seen in the past few years, I knew it was bad, but I didn't realize just how bad it is. So, and when I say sanctioned racism, what I'm talking about is something that, you know, where a particular group can be targeted, can be discriminated against, and for whatever reason, it can be just ignored or downplayed or whatever. And I'm sure plenty of people know where I'm going with this. So the incident I'm referring to happened at South Philadelphia High School. And the date of focus is December 3rd, 2009. And this was one day. There were dozens. I believe it was right around 30 Asian students were targeted at this high school by black teens, dozens of black teens, and physically and verbally just attacked them, unprovoked. And these students, at the end of all this, it was mass chaos. And at the end of all this, quite a few of them actually had to go to the hospital with injuries. And the students ended up organizing a boycott to actually get the administration to take action, because what they discovered was these students were filing, you know, these complaints and going to their administrators, going to their teachers, going to their principal, some of them for several years, talking about the abuse that they've been experiencing from Black students. Some of the students tried hiding. Some of the Asian students, they tried to hide their injuries from their parents, that sort of thing, because they just wanted to go to school. They just wanted to get an education, and they figured they can hold out. They can just tolerate the abuse until they graduate. Well, it hit its peak at this time with this incident, and the students said, we just can't. We can't no more. This has to stop. And before this incident happened, when they would file complaints and they would go to their administrators, what they were dealing with is they would deal with Black teachers that would ignore it. They would deal with white teachers that would mostly ignore it, or they were just too afraid to do anything because the agitators, the aggressors, the attackers were Black teens. They didn't want to be labeled as racist. They didn't want to risk losing their job. So they just would encourage the students to, you know, to fight through it, or they would, the advice, and this is coming from some of the students and some of their statements they've made, they were encouraged to, you know, try to befriend the Black students, or be more friendly, you know, or just try to avoid them, you know, don't antagonize them. And these students weren't doing anything. So after this incident happened, the kids, they organize a boycott. It starts to get attention from the local news. People start talking about it. And so some of the teachers and some of the administrators, when they had to explain some of this, the way they initially explained it was, oh, no, it's a back and forth. You know, it's Blacks and Asians. It's just been a clash that's been going on for years, you know, and it's both sides, you know. And you hear that a lot whenever you talk about Black mob violence or Black violence against, you know, another minority or against whites. People will try to write it off and say, well, you know, well, every racial group has its bad apples. You know, every racial group deals with this sort of thing. You know, racism exists in every racial group. And to that I say, well, yes, but that doesn't excuse, you know, just mass insanity, you know, at such a high scale coming from one particular group. And we're not going to address that. You know, we're not going to address that pattern we're seeing. And this situation, you know, anytime somebody would bring up the race of the students or the fact that all the attackers were Black, they would say, don't be racist. You know, that's, you know, the race initially, they said race had nothing to do with it. Okay, well, the students are, their statements say that they were called racial slurs by the Black students. Oh, well, we still shouldn't jump to conclusions until all the facts come out, you know, and then more information starts to come out. And they still, like, they still, these administrators, they still just were reluctant to just be honest about it. And it's scary. It's absolutely scary to think about these students being just tormented, you know, and this goes back, you know, I'm 38 years old. And even when I was in high school, there were times where, you know, some white students or some, we only had a few Asian students would deal with, you know, being just kind of pushed around and that sort of thing and would feel isolated or like they couldn't go to anyone. And you'd have to sort of encourage them to do that because the ones that I encountered, all of them aren't shy, but the ones I encountered, they were very shy, you know, and their parents were immigrants and they didn't want to make any waves. They just wanted to get their education and they just wanted to move on and just go to college. I mean, just the whole American dream thing, you know, the thing that, that pushed them to make that big move, and come all this way. So it's just something that's, yeah, incredibly sad. Fortunately, this some good came from this incident because there was some anti-bullying policies that were pushed and were blessed off by the Department of Justice. But of course, you know, when they did talk about the anti-bullying policy and they talked about the incident, they would not really throw out there the fact that it was black on Asian violence. And we've seen, just in the past 2 years, I mean, there's dozens and dozens of stories either involving black mob violence or individual attacks, primarily by black men, against Asians. And a few of them that I dug into, you know, fortunately, those individuals were eventually caught. And it was treated as a hate crime in most cases. But some of those stories, like the initial headlines, I would take a look and they would be reluctant to mention the person's race. You know, they would mention maybe the first name or just the last name, or it wouldn't mention the name at all. It would just say male attacker. And then a later story would give the full name of the attacker. And then eventually it would say black male. But it just story after story. You know, like I looked at one, you know, April 29th, 2021, this person, Jared Powell, you know, attacked a 61-year-old man and nearly stomped him to death. He's in a hospital now fighting for his life. And this was in Manhattan, you know, May 5th, 2021. Daryl Doles assaulted an elderly Asian business owner and her friend who was helping her close their shop. And attacked them with a cinder block, nearly killed them. You know, and that one, fortunately, it was treated as a hate crime. Of course, you know, I think it should just be crime, and hate crime just further, I don't know, makes the water more murky and makes things a bit messy. And the focus should just be on individual rights of the citizen. But of course, hate crimes, it just keeps us divided up in our groups. But hey, that's the system, unfortunately, right now. And it's just, you know, there were hammer attacks and stabbings and, you know, and there was stories that I found from San Francisco and Oakland and L.A. And then you come back over to the East Coast and in Chicago and New York and New Jersey and, you know, down in Florida and just all this stuff. And I look at this, I'm like, how did I miss all this? And I mentioned before about the vicious knockout game that a lot of black youths seem to be playing in just dozens of cities. And they focus on Asians and whites. But it doesn't get a whole lot of press because it goes against the narrative. And right now, the quote unquote, the black victim is a very valuable group, be it the to the race hustlers, to the mainstream media, to politicians. They can't have that victimhood status being tarnished once people start looking at all these stories, hundreds and hundreds of stories, and we're not even, you know, we can only speculate about the unreported or the ignored, because there are a lot of times where immigrants are, you know, targeted for home invasions and all that kind of stuff, and people will do it because they feel that they're less likely to retaliate because they don't have a lot of family here, they don't have a lot of resources, they may not understand the culture, that sort of thing, so they'll take advantage of that. So I mean, it's just it's incredibly sad. And those who didn't listen to any of my commentary before about the knockout game, the concept is it's usually several people that are involved and they try to knock someone out with one punch. And there's quite a few videos and video feeds and CCTV camera footage where they'll come back and they'll rob the person, that sort of thing. It's resulted in several deaths. You know, of course, that's, you know, the media won't really put this front and center because it just doesn't align with what it is they're pushing right now. It doesn't align with the black victimhood status, the black victimhood narrative, which, you know, it blows my mind just what some people can get away with or because of the way things are, the way the culture, just the way things have become, that people can become so laxed that they could play a game like this that results in the deaths of people. And sometimes the knockout game, they'll make variations of it. It'll involve a knife stabbing someone. And there have been incidences where people have died. But when these stories come up, it's the same thing every time. Like, oh, race doesn't have anything to do with it. And it's funny how race has nothing to do with it until it does. If it's someone white, then that's all we hear about. You know, white man shoots two people. You know, white man attacks this person. But then for every one of those stories, you'll have like 200 stories about a black teen or a young black male between the ages of, you know, 13 and 29 attacking someone. And we can't really jump to conclusions here about whether race was, you know, a factor in it. It's just ridiculous. And we saw the endless excuses that were just trotted around whenever somebody would, you know, even I looked at some of the footage on some of the looting and the rioting and everything. And I'm just like, okay, all I see are black folks. Oh, look, there's one white guy. Oh, that's something. Hey, look, there's an Asian guy in there in the midst of the 30,000 black teens that are running through the streets like pack animals, just destroying stuff. Even destroying black-owned businesses. They did not care. But yeah, sure, we can't look at patterns or anything like that, you know, because, hey, I guess patterns are racist too, you know. And haven't you heard math is racist as well? So it's essentially sanctioned. It's something that's, in some cases, encouraged. Of course, we had our politicians that were telling people to, you know, like Maxine Waters, you know, to get confrontational and, you know, and stay out in the streets. And, you know, you have the, you know, Nancy Pelosi last year and talking about like, I don't know, there should be more uprisings. I don't understand why there aren't more. And why are there, I mean, just egging people on to bring out the absolute worst in them. And of course, we have our younger generation just getting all that, you know, thanks to social media and everything, and their smartphones, they're getting all that information, all that propaganda, and they're getting just all wound up, and they're primed, and then someone hits that primer and just sets them off, and then makes up all the excuses in the world, and we're supposed to just step back and accept it. And one just connected story, but the Lori Lightfoot, the mayor in Chicago. She made some statements about how she will, going forward, she wants to only do one-on-one interviews with black or brown journalists only. No whites allowed. And that's not racist because Jim Crow? I don't know. A legacy of slavery. I guess that's the usual go-to. And that's perfectly fine. We can have somebody make a statement like that on a major radio station. It can be a headline in a newspaper. It can be on national television. But wait, you know, this person, she's black, so it's okay. Oh, and she's a woman too, so that's a double whammy. So yeah, she can just make a racist statement, and also be racist, because now we're getting into not just your words but your actual actions towards a particular race. So now you are blocking white journalists from communicating with you or sitting down with you. One might even say that's starting to get into maybe some constitutional rights there. I don't know. But no, that's perfectly fine. Perfectly acceptable. You know, we even, you know, had a member in Congress. This was back in January, during the whole quote-unquote insurrection, which that word is just worthless and meaningless and has been misused to death, like racist and, I don't know, impeachment. But we had a member of the House drone on and on about how dangerous, or what is it, that, you know, white male soldiers are a threat and they should be scrutinized and evaluated, and their Facebook pages should be checked and everything if they're coming here to, you know, protect the president during the inauguration. And, you know, and he said that. This guy just says this. No one challenges that statement. No one raises their hand and says, what the hell, what is wrong with you? How can you make a statement like that? You know, and nothing. They just let it fly. Because that's where we are. In order for the hatred to stay alive, you know, the racism to stay alive, and, you know, because these are cash cows we're talking about here. There's money in fear, unfortunately. There's money in war. There's money in racism. There's not a whole lot of money in unity or peace. It's sad, but that's where we are right now. And the cash cows, I mean, there are people out there that are trying to just milk it for all it's worth. And they do not care. Those special interests, those politicians, the mainstream media, those race hustlers, it's all about just making money. It's about money, power, and influence. And they clearly do not care about who gets caught in their crosshairs. They don't care about how many people actually get hurt, how many low-income neighborhoods get burned to the ground, which we saw last year with little areas like, you know, Kenosha, Wisconsin, with all these, you know, small businesses that were burned down over that shooting of Blake. I can't remember his first name, but a black criminal who had a warrant, if I recall, for sexually assaulting a woman. And the police are doing their job, but hey, you know, whatever. But they use all that stuff, and everyone just gets so wrapped up in it that they don't, I won't say they, because it's not everyone, but there's a large portion of the population, for whatever reason, that gets sucked into this. It's like a spell. It really is. To the point where they're not asking obvious questions anymore. It's just all emotional, knee-jerk reactions. You know, which is why it's easy to weaponize all this stuff. I mean, it is. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a cost imposed on me for the things that I've said. Even though what I'm saying is completely true. Even though I can provide, you know, whatever references anyone needs to validate or fact check anything that I'm saying, there's nothing I've said here is untrue, but it's not popular and it's outside of the approved spectrum of opinion, the approved spectrum of conversation. Now, I'm black, so it's a bit tricky. You know, you can't just call me a racist, even though some try, or they try calling me, what is it, internalized racist. Or a self-loathing racist, or a turncoat racist, or race traitor. So there's all those. Or they'll just go old school and just call me a coon or something like that. And I'm talking about black and white, usually liberal on the left. But it's amazing. And I've had conversations with so many people. And when all the quote-unquote mostly peaceful protests were happening last year and early this year, and I would talk about, like, just all the criminal offenses, all the criminal acts being committed here, and the death and the looting and the destruction, and there were people that would still talk about slavery or whatever, and it almost makes you want to pull your hair out. It's like, are you high? When is it ever okay to infringe on the rights of someone else? How do you justify that? How do you call that racial justice or social justice when you're infringing on the rights of others? And there are people who even argue, well, white people have had so much power. That's what it's about. That's racism is tied to power. So if you didn't have power in the past, then, you know, you can't be racist now, but those who their lineage goes back to power. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Well, for one, it was just a small percentage of the population that owned slaves back then because, well, slavery was a rich man's game. You know, people act like it was cheap to feed, clothe, house, and maintain human beings. But no, it was incredibly expensive. It was a small percentage of population. So it's not every white person you see here today has lineage to, you know, some slave master or whatever. But the media has done such a great job with the propaganda, and it's been ingrained in us for so many years. People have just accepted that programming to the point where their beliefs just, it defies all logic and reason. Which is why, you know, I firmly believe that, you know, anti-racism is essentially a cult. And it has its own belief system. It has its own hierarchy, its own structure, its own Bible, all that good stuff. But, you know, I believe it's a cult. I mean, the fact that you can provide someone with numbers and information and history and still, they will not be moved. It says a lot. So that was just some of my thoughts, just the concept of sanctioned racism and just a couple stories. And if anybody wants to take a look, just go ahead and take a look at, it was South Philadelphia High School. It was December 3rd, 2009 when that incident took place, where dozens and dozens of black students attacked dozens of Asian students that were unprovoked. And that's not the only incident. That was just the one I focused on for this because I wanted to keep it under 30 minutes. I could talk for days. And you know what? I might just do it because I still think there are people out there that don't believe me when I talk about the absolute danger, the absolute cancer that is black criminality in America. And sooner or later, we'll get around to talking about it. Or, you know, everything around us will just crumble, you know, one or the other. But soon as something's going to happen. But hey, that's just some of my thoughts. Please, you know, feel free to shoot me a message if you want to add some input. You can also catch me on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and on Spotify. Please feel free to leave me a review if you'd like. And you can also find me on LinkedIn. I also set up a Snell Nation Instagram page. Just set that up. So I'm not hard to find. And with that, Snell Nation out.